From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. The surge in our power to handle vast amounts of data is touching every corner of our lives, from the political process to the way we consume media. It's also happening, it turns out, in medicine.
If you aggregate people with the same disease, you will start seeing patterns that you hadn't previously perceived. And in those patterns are really going to be answers to the mechanisms that drive disease.
Today we hear from the head of a Johns Hopkins University Precision Medicine Initiative about the move toward a more customized approach to healthcare. What are the advantages? Are there drawbacks? When will we see precision medicine in our doctor's office? And how will we know it when we see it? It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. Today we're talking about a term you may have heard, but hasn't been clear to you, precision medicine. President Obama launched a precision medicine initiative last year, and hospitals across the country are doing the same. Precision medicine is often described as healthcare tailored to the individual. What exactly does that mean? How close is it to becoming reality? Our guest today can shed light on those questions. Dr. Anthony Rosen is co-director of Hopkins in Health, the Johns Hopkins University Precision Medicine Initiative. He's also director of the Division of Rheumatology at Hopkins. Anthony Rosen, welcome to On the Record.
Thank you very much, Sheila.
Let's start with the basics. What is your definition of precision medicine?
So there are many definitions of precision medicine, but I think what captures it the most is that precision medicine really brings the revolutionary tools of our era to the diagnosis, the prevention, the monitoring, and the therapy of human disease. And these really are dramatic tools and have the power potentially to change medicine in very favorable ways.
When you talk about using revolutionary tools, what are you talking about?
So the last three decades, I think, have seen the world be presented with tools which are really changing the way we live. Those tools include the power of computing, the speed of computing, the tremendous increase in the connectivity between humans, the connectivity between humans and devices, the connectivity between devices and devices, tremendous changes and gains in the way that we measure things. Even 10 years ago, we used to measure one parameter at a time. And in order to do that out of humans, you needed to have a significant amount of material. So you needed to take a couple teaspoons of blood, or you needed to take a biopsy, which was significant in size. Measurement has been changed dramatically. So now you can measure tens of thousands of genes simultaneously, and you can measure them out of really vanishingly small amounts of human material. So these changes, I think, in measurement data, analysis and connectivity are changing our world. They've changed our politics. They're changing our economy. They're changing almost every aspect of our lives. And those same tools are being deployed in medicine. And the prediction is that they are going to change the face of medicine as well.
I'm having an easier time understanding how something like connectivity or ability to sort through huge amounts of data, show up in the economy, show up in politics. I'm not quite sure how it shows up in precision medicine.
So the encounter of a patient with a health system. The old encounter was that a physician and a patient, there was data that passed between them. There was some measurement. There was a judgment on the part of a physician. The physician used experience, wisdom, intuition to define this is what the patient has, these are the tests that I need, these are the best ways to intervene. That was, if you think about it, many different individuals, lots of series of one-offs. But what the tools of data and analysis now allow is for those series of one-offs to be aggregated so that basically the whole health system can learn from how a patient presents, what subgroup of disease that patient belongs to, what the likelihood is that a patient is going to get a complication. So data and the ability to deal with large amounts of it, the ability to use novel and really powerful algorithms to find patterns, the ability to harness this tremendous wisdom and intuition of physicians, and for the health system to learn the patterns and how best to influence them, that's the power of data.
So these interactions between a patient and a doctor get captured in some form of data that can be compared to other data. That's one example of data that precision medicine can tap into to say this is what this patient needs or this is what this group of patient needs. You talked about a subgroup.
Great questions. Really, Johns Hopkins brought something unique to the world in the late 1890s, and that was the concept that not all patients with a specific diagnosis are identical. Some patients can get one complication, some patients can get another complication. So that component of not focusing only on the individual, but focusing on subgroups in the short term, that's where the real power of precision medicine is going to come from.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Dr. Anthony Rosen, co-director of Hopkins in Health, a precision medicine initiative at Johns Hopkins University. What was it that got you focused on precision medicine and got you so excited about it? I mean, was there a particular moment or a particular interaction where you thought, ah, this is what I want to focus on?
Yeah, rheumatology is a very complicated specialty. We see patients with very complicated diseases. Sometimes it takes months or years to actually be able to diagnose what a patient has. And what we recognized at Johns Hopkins Rheumatology pretty early was that the likelihood of defining subgroups was much, much more likely if you aggregated patients with a particular diagnosis in one center. And so we grew a scleroderma center, a myositis center, a Sjogren's disease center, an arthritis center, a lupus center, and we invited patients to partner with us in discovery. People join up into these prospective studies. We collect large amounts of data. We collect large amounts of materials over time. And one of these centers we started was focused on myositis, which is inflammation of muscles. Patients come with weakness of muscles and high levels of muscle enzymes that leak out into the blood. It's a rare disease, but we opened it and we were deluged with patients. And two colleagues started noticing a group of patients that they had never seen before. They had muscle enzymes that instead of being in the couple thousand were in the 10,000 range. And they had an unusual feature on their muscle biopsy. They recognized that there was a subgroup of people who they hadn't seen before. They rapidly realized that these patients had antibodies against a particular molecule. They identified what that molecule was, and it turned out that it was the target of the statin drugs. And it turned out that most of those patients had been taking statins. Statins had induced this immune response, and that immune response was causing this muscle damage. You could treat them now with immunosuppressives and stop the statin. And they had excellent successes. The opportunities, I think, then became clear. If you aggregate people with the same disease, you will start seeing patterns that you hadn't previously perceived. And in those patterns are really going to be answers to the mechanisms that drive disease.
I think I'm getting a glimmer, but it would help me to actually hear you say, what is the biggest advantage of a more individualized approach to medicine?
One of the best ways I think we can think about this is to look at how a medicine has evolved over the past 30 to 50 years. Because one of the potential criticisms of precision medicine is that it could just be making things much more complicated and not making things more effective, cheaper, more efficient, more patient-friendly. And so the question is measurement really going to be the answer? And I think that if you look at the history, that really is the case. So, for example, peptic ulcer disease. When I was at medical school, peptic ulcer disease was very frequent. That's gastric ulcers, duodenal ulcers, And people used to think that it came from what you ate and stress and so on. And in those days, when people got ulcers, they tried some antacid treatment, did or didn't work, and people could even end up having a piece of their stomach cut out. They could have their vagus nerves interrupted. Those were the therapies. And it was incredibly expensive. Peptic ulcer disease was an incredibly expensive piece of the healthcare budget. And then with tests, with science, it was realized that peptic ulcer disease is induced by a bacterium. So simple tests can now make the diagnosis, and the therapies are specifically focused at that organism, and peptic ulcer disease doesn't end up with surgical outcomes and adding a huge amount of cost to the budget. So is that
an example of precision medicine?
That absolutely is an example of precision medicine, where measurement is able to define a group of patients. That group of patients are unified by having a disease that's driven by a mechanism, and that intervention becomes specific. So what is the potential of precision medicine? The potential is to identify subgroups of people whose diseases are driven primarily by distinct molecular mechanisms, and to define those mechanisms and recognize them, have tools to say you belong to that subgroup and your therapy is going to be focused on that cause.
We need to take a quick break here on the record. There's lots more I want to ask you. So when On the Record returns, more about precision medicine. Stay tuned.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about precision medicine, an approach to healthcare tailored to the individual. We're speaking with Dr. Anthony Rosen, a rheumatologist who co-directs the Johns Hopkins Precision Medicine Initiative called Hopkins in Health. If we spend time and money tailoring treatments to individuals and looking hard at what's going to work for this individual, doesn't that mean the system is going to be actually neglecting larger public health goals like decreasing poverty and obesity?
I think those are always issues when there is a finite budget, that there are many competing priorities, all worthy. And the question is precision medicine going to bring value, or is it going to consume resource? And I think the answer is that if we are faithful stewards of funds, that precision medicine must bring value. Precision medicine is not about making discoveries that are interesting. Precision medicine is about changing the world and bringing efficient healthcare of great value to society and the population. And so I think that a focus on poverty, a focus on health, these are things that societies grapple with and balance. And with precision medicine, as with everything else, they will grapple and balance with that. The one thing that I'm confident of is that, done well, precision medicine is going to use our current health resource more wisely rather than consume more.
Does that mean it's going to cost less?
With time, I think it will cost less.
Why would that be?
Well, if you think about cancer therapies now. So a patient gets diagnosed with a cancer, and that all you know is what the histology is, what the cancer looks like under the microscope. In order to treat that, you would do potentially surgery. If they need chemotherapy or other therapies, you would add other therapies based on what the cancer type was. But what we've learned is that cancers are tremendously heterogeneous, and that you could take a treatment which is extraordinarily expensive, and you could try it against cancer X, and it doesn't work at all. That has cost, tremendous cost to the system. What precision medicine will do is identify subgroups of people in whom those therapies are more likely to work. Therefore, you won't be spending money unnecessarily on patients in whom there really isn't a likelihood of getting any benefit. You will be focusing your therapies on those groups who are most likely to benefit. So just doing that is going to change the value proposition.
How is it going to change things for the pharmaceutical industry?
Well, the old view of King drugs was that all you needed to do was get a relatively low-hanging fruit. You needed a mechanism that was potentially relevant to a large population, and it really didn't matter whether everybody responded or not. What precision medicine really is focusing, and I think the value that it potentially will bring, is that the pharmaceutical industry will also be able to, I think, focus their therapies on those people who are most likely to respond. Pharmaceutical companies will be able to recruit patients who are most likely to respond based on mechanism for their clinical trials. Therefore, the size of clinical trials may change. That process may become much more efficient. So I think if we do precision medicine well, that everybody will win. I think the pharmaceutical companies will win. I think the public will win. I think the profession will win, and society will win.
Does precision medicine present ethical questions that medicine hasn't had to deal with before?
There's an old biblical saying that, you know, I present you today a blessing and a curse, and all new technologies and all new concepts bring the potential for blessing and curse. And I do think that we are going to have to think very carefully about many aspects of precision medicine to really ensure that patients embrace and are partners in this process, I think is very important. I think it's going to be very important for patient data to be in safe places. And one of the key priorities of the InHealth initiative is really to create a data platform that is able to ingest patient-related data from many different sources and is able to keep them safe and not accessible to people who shouldn't access them, and really enable discovery. Those aspects, I think, are going to be critical for us to solve early on in this process.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Dr. Anthony Rosen, co-director of Hopkins in Health, a precision medicine initiative at Johns Hopkins University. I'm still not clear on whether precision medicine will create better ways to try to end disparities in health outcomes.
If you look at causes of disparities in healthcare, they are often related to the inability to access real data in real time about how a patient with that particular disease at that particular time should be treated. And learning health systems, I think, are going to be incredibly powerful to bring to the health system's attention the fact that a therapy needs to be applied in this circumstance.
Can you give me an example?
So, for example, heart attacks in minority populations and how they're treated. So there is disparity in the United States related to that. A part of that is implicit bias. A part of that is socioeconomic. But I think that information applied in real time in this learning health kind of concept where data from similar people can inform what the best practice is with that kind of patient in real time could be incredibly powerful.
Where would you say we are in the course of precision medicine?
If you were to look at an exponential graph, one of these which is flat at the beginning and then soars up like a straight line and then plateaus off, we would be on the flat part just before the curve starts to shoot up. And the opportunity here is great. What I fear is that we could get it wrong.
What's the most likely way we'd get it wrong?
I think there are two. One is overpromising. As I pointed out, I think we are really at the beginning of this enormous opportunity, but it's really at the beginning. And that opportunity will fashion itself as it progresses. We shouldn't overpromise either in terms of pace or in terms of outcome. I think the second risk is to oversimplify. Because precision medicine is complicated in reality, the human biology that underlies human disease is complicated, there's the tendency to oversimplify and say that precision medicine is about a person's genome, and a person's genome is going to predict who gets what and when. And that's unlikely to happen. In fact, there are studies that suggest that the human genome is incredibly important. Its measurement is going to be really, really important in cancer, which is a disease of mutations in cancer cells. But there's this tendency to wish that the genome is the answer and that precision medicine is just going to sprout from the genome alone. And the answer is that there are many new measurements, and these measurements are all going to be important, and they're all going to contribute to understanding the things that manifest as human disease.
And it's not all about genes.
It's not all about genes.
I have read of cases where a precision medicine treatment seemed to work great, had a big impact, few side effects, and then it stopped working and the cancer reasserted itself. What is at work there?
So cancer is a disease of a plastic genome. We as humans have a fixed genome, and we get buffeted by a variety of different stimuli. We respond, but our genome stays the same. Yeah, and we have so many redundant, overlapping pathways that guard our genome against mutation. Cancer has lost some of these protective mechanisms that make sure that every time a cell divides, that it gives you the identical copy of the genome. Its genome can change.
So if the initial treatment is responding to the form of cancer now.
Exactly.
And the cancer mutates, then all of a sudden that very specialized treatment that was working so well doesn't work as it mutates.
Exactly right. There is this recognition that immunotherapies in cancer, which are all the rage, this idea that there are these immune checkpoint blockers that allow the immune system to see the cancer, respond to it, and start to fight against it, that they may actually get by some of these escape mechanisms in some people, because as plastic as the cancer is in its genome, so plastic is the immune system. Our immune system can follow viruses and many things as they mutate. And the idea that the two could really be fighting each other, the cancer trying to escape and the immune system following, I think has great potential for the future.
Is immune therapy a form of precision medicine?
You bet it is. Remember, these immunotherapy agents are really in the very earliest phase, but the selection of who may respond is based on markers as to whether the cancer has what's needed in order to respond. So that's certainly one aspect of precision. I think the definition of how the cancer responds over time and measuring its genome, again, is an idea of precision, because we could never measure all the genes and their mutations. 10 years ago, even, that would have been inconceivable. Now it's a commodity.
Meaning?
Sequencing is, you buy it off the shelf. You can buy sequencing.
And that's part of why precision medicine
is leaping. That's exactly right. That's the power of these tools. And the genome is just one. You can measure all the proteins in a cell. You can measure metabolites, many metabolites at one time. We never could do that before. This is really a new era.
At the pace things are moving, we're talking about this exploding in the next few years, in the next few decades?
In the next few years, for sure. I think that within the next decade, we are going to see some dramatic examples where diseases are going to be changed by the tools that we currently have. You know, I graduated from medical school in 1984, and I did internal medicine and rheumatology. The rate of change of our understanding of disease was relatively flat. And I will say that I have never felt this level of optimism and excitement.
It's wonderful to hear your excitement about it. I really appreciate your sharing it with us. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Dr. Anthony Rosen is co-director of Hopkins in Health, the Johns Hopkins University Precision Medicine Initiative. He's also director of the Division of Rheumatology at Hopkins. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for listening. Tune in tomorrow.